One, two, menage trois.
Hey everybody, it's Sonic Cereal. How you doing?
I'm Mark.
And I'm Jesse.
And in this podcast, we take a deep dive into albums from some of our favorite artists, track by track.
Yeah, and we're continuing with Björk's Vesper Teen, and it was released in August 19, 2001, as R-Pop, Glitch Pop, Folktronica, and it was released on One Little Independent Records. And it's about introversion and intimacy. And today, what songs are we doing?
We are doing It's Not Up to You, Undo, and Pagan Poetry. Sounds like a party.
Good songs.
Let's start with track 3, It's Not Up to You.
Yeah. You want to turn off the AC?
It's going to take a minute.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, it was not released as a single from Vesper Teen, but although it sounds like one, you know?
Yeah. All right, let's get your one track or your one line overview of this song.
This is a song about dealing with life's curveballs with a backing magical production that feels like the epitome of the album. Wouldn't you say?
That sounds made up. I would say life is unpredictable, and I like it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe she was just hungover, but...
But wait, this is also one of my favorite Björk songs.
It's mine, too.
No.
Off this album. This is my second favorite album.
Okay.
From Björk.
Yeah. I like that life is unpredictable. Imagine if every day was just the same routine.
Yeah. That'd be boring.
Boring.
But...
What's your first impression?
I think it feels like wandering in the Bavarian Christmas town. You know what I mean? Like Leavenworth?
Yeah.
Something? What's your problem?
Because there's a bunch of towns in actual Bavaria.
So?
Okay.
You're wandering around a Bavarian Christmas town.
It sounds like the softer side of a Tim Burton film.
Sure does.
What'd you say?
I said it sure does.
Okay. I thought you said true dis. you never say that.
Huh. Well, this sounds similar to Selma's songs, and it's like... And it feels like you're encountering the first conflict of the journey, as the previous tracks were gentle and joyous.
Who said that?
I said that.
All right, tell us about production.
Well, the song begins with slippery percussive insect sounds. Setting a unique tone. It's very gastrointestinal. And the track features a range of instruments, including a music box, strings, clavichord, played by Guy Sigsworth, of course, and choir, flutes, and harps by Carol Thomas and Zena Parkins.
What do you know about Zena Parkins?
Oh, Zena Parkins. She previously played with Hole on their MTV Unplugged show. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And she met Björk while performing at a club called Tonic in New York City. You ever been?
No.
And the beats were created by Falgeir Sigurdsson, who's known for his work with Mjum and Sigur Rós.
I like Mjum.
Yeah, they're good. I like it. And then he also has some solo albums as well. And it sounds good. His music sounds good.
Yeah.
Did Björk use a particular software to create?
Why, yes. She used Pro Tools extensively to produce many of the songs on the album. The production feels like artwork from the band album booklet. You wrote this. What does this mean?
I was just
trying to use Pro Tools. Okay.
I was just trying to say the production feels like the artwork from the album booklet with all the black ink and white doodles, like squiggly lines and random designs.
So you're saying like the audio interpretation of that imagery would sound like this.
It's just like all these things going on. It's layered and on top of each other, weaving in and out of each other. And then, you know what? When I was in high school, all my doodles were inspired by the art in this album.
Fuck yeah.
So you can just deal. All right, tell me about what this song means.
It's about letting go of things that you can't control. And how about you? What do you think about that concept of letting go of things you can't control?
I just think, honestly, you should live by this song because you often get hung up on things that don't go your way, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I used to, but not anymore. I've gotten...
Do you remember the last time you've gotten so stressed out over things not going your way?
I mean, every day a little bit.
Oh, damn. Sorry, okay.
But in a big way, it's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, you know, you gain some, you lose some.
Well, so she explained that it's not up to you. Would have been on Homogenic. The lyric would have been, it's up to me, I'm going to get this done, you know, like, come on.
Yeah.
And then verse 13 was like, it's not up to me, and just surrendering that I don't know what the answers are, and I'm just going to trust and just let it go, see what happens, where fate takes me.
For sure. Well, I'm going to tell you about some live performances.
Tell me.
This song, It's Not Up to You, was part of Bjork's set list during Vespertine World Tour and from 2001 to 2002, where she often included a full choir and orchestra to capture the song's lush, immersive feel. Damn, girl.
What? She went on tour, she had a choir.
That's crazy.
Alright, I'll tell you about my favorite lyric.
Tell me, please.
It's not up to you. Well, it never really was. Like, the idea that we can't control everything, and sometimes the best approach is just let things unfold naturally.
Yeah. I mean, we can't control our own existence. Well, you can.
And I also like, I wake up and the day feels broken, which initially feels like miserable, but then she says, the evening I've always longed for. It could happen. So it's like, you wake up feeling miserable, but the fact that you think you have hope that it could happen.
I have hope.
Means that you're not that miserable. Miserable is when you're like, I have no hope.
Just fuck it. Well, I like the lyric, if you wake up and the day feels broken, just lean into the crack and it will tremble ever so nicely. That's the dirty.
What does it feel like?
You don't even know. It feels like trying to make the best of a terrible situation. Like, when it rains, it pours. You might as well get wild and wet. And when life gives you lemons, make a lemon meringue. What?
Okay.
What are you going to do?
Just that. Exactly that.
Yeah.
What are the critics saying?
Arguing the most beautiful song on Vespertine is the equivalent of arguing... Which color of taste?
Oh, I thought you said witches, like flying on a broom.
The best in a packet of M&Ms. However, the third track on the album, It's Not Up to You, with its playful yet heavenly strings, harp, and choir, it's my favorite. Yeah. Are there any remixes of this song?
Yeah, it was covered by Stornoway. And you told me you really like the acoustic shed version.
Yeah, it's cool.
What do you like about it?
They play on a koto and an acoustic guitar.
Koto? Let's listen to it now. Anyway, it's not up to you. Oh, it never really
was. It's not up to you. That's so racist.
If I did a French accent, would that be racist? No. I was like,
all right. Well, the last time Bjork performed It's Not Up to You was in 2011 at the Manchester International Festival.
And I would say, as a summary, this song stands out as a gentle, complimentative. Oh, I can't. Piece that reflects the overall tone and spirit of Vespertine,
showcasing Bjork's ability to blend electronic experimentation with heartfelt poetic lyricism.
You always get the last word.
Don't you know it? What's the next song?
This is track 4, Undo.
All right, this is another song that's in theme with relaxing and managing stress.
Yeah, it's like pings and bloops and hums and twinkles.
All right, well, for those of us that speak English here, my first impressions were that Bjork wrote Undo during a 2-week session in Reykjavik with Danish electronic musician Thomas Nack, also known as Opiate. And he provided the minimalist rhythmic backbone, while Bjork layered her ethereal vocals and orchestrations all over it.
Yeah. Sounds like she came all over.
She did.
Bjork has mentioned that the song's main theme is about surrender and letting things happen naturally. It's essentially a call for people to not try too hard.
Yeah, it conveys the message of self-compassion and acceptance, a recurring theme throughout the album.
And on a recent listen, what did you feel? We listened to it. What was your...
I felt like when the choir rises, it's like gently rocketing up into the atmosphere, looking at all the stars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I see that. How does it fit in with the album's flow? This is the fourth song.
It feels like the more uplifting, positive resolution to It's Not Up to You. Edit. Undo. Do you know what I'm talking about? Someone out there knows what I'm talking about.
I do.
Give me some production highlights.
Well, Nack started by creating a beat using a few synths, and then months later, Bjork added the choir, orchestra, and harp.
Yeah, and interestingly, Nack later reused that beat for his own song, 1% and 2/3 Speed, on his 2002 album, While You Were Sleeping. It also has similarities to his track called Read Through Colors.
He'd be lucky if 1% of the population ever heard of that. But no, I had not heard it until we were doing research for this.
Yeah.
And I really like it.
Yeah, it's good. And I also love how the bass sounds in the song and the unique beat pattern. It's like nothing I've ever heard before.
There's also some squishy, creepy, crawly insect sounds that add kind of a sense of eeriness.
It's so gastrointestinal.
No, it's not. Tell me about the harp in the outro.
Well, it has a nice touch, and it actually reminds me of Daft Punk's Short Circuit
from yes.
their Discovery album. Thank you. It's cool. Yeah.
Okay.
There must have been a 2001 thing, if you know what I mean.
Speaking of meaning, what is the song meaning?
The song is about shaking the waters off your feathers, you know? Bjork wrote it as a way to express how she shed the trauma from her difficult experience filming Dancer in the Dark.
Shaking the waters off your feathers, and she had the
swan dress. Yeah, crazy. It just all comes together so perfectly, doesn't it?
It's like a creme brulee on a cold winter's night.
Oh.
So she said, I actually remember doing the film, coming home in 1999, like in September or something, and just stopping completely, going cold turkey on wine, alcohol, and coffee for like 8 months. She was like,
just what happened to me? I couldn't have anything. What do you call it? Crutches? I had to just understand with my essence and process it.
So what do you make of this?
Sometimes when you go through a horrible experience, you're like, all right, I'm not going to like give in to vices and crutches, and I'm going to sort this out myself and just do it the natural way, cold turkey, and just let time
heal. Or actually just do it versus avoiding it. Or
yeah, just dive into it.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone cold turkey on anything like that?
No. Yeah. Have you?
Just food.
You have not gone cold turkey on food one day in your life.
Oh, God. That's so rude. Well, what's a key lyric and why is it important?
Well, it's not meant to be a strife. It's not meant to be a struggle uphill. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, not all the time anyway. I truly believe sometimes one cannot appreciate the good without enduring the bad. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
What are the critics saying?
A reviewer at AOTY.
Album of the year.
Album of the year. Said, after the fourth song and duo, I had to take a break from the album. Bjork seemed so in love with the first two songs and very quickly got troublesome for her. And the way she imitates that in Undo was too much for me to bear. Okay, sensitive. Too much me for me to bear. Oh.
Well, first I thought he was in, like, North Carolina at a plantation, but then he was in L.A. in a porn.
Wow. Well, what did another critic say?
Another critic said, minimalist electronic pulses and Bjork's fragile vocals create a palpable sense of vulnerability and cathartic bliss.
Who said that?
That's Sputnik Music.
Mm.
You know her?
No. Well, Matt Most did a remix and it's called Undone.
Let's take a listen. Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like two birds of a feather.
They're partners.
I know.
Two birds of a feather.
You've never heard that before?
We saw them live at the Great American Music Hall, and it was fun. They were really good live performers.
Yeah. It was a fun show.
Yeah.
What about some trivia?
Well, the last time Bjork performed Undo was in 2015 during her Vonlacora tour, and I really liked that performance.
And there's several mashups and covers of the song as well, including
Nathan Fake created a mashup of Undo with Duplo Remote's Cuss, but I'm really excited about that.
Let's take a listen. Oh, yeah.
What else?
There's another mashup with Kalia's Sorbet.
Kalela's
Sorbet.
Yeah. It's cool. I like it. And then your favorite, Bette Midler, did a mashup with Madonna's Live to Tell. Praise be, girl.
I like Bette Midler.
And you like Madonna's Live to Tell.
Live to Tell. Yes. Because that's like from really early, like when she first started.
Yeah. And then Mount Erie also did a little cover in their song called Voice in Headphones. All right. Well.
All right. Let's start with track 5, Pagan Poetry.
This is the second single from the album, and it feels witchy.
And I love me some Orchestrina. Do you know what Orchestrina is?
No. Tell me.
An Orchestrina is a music box. That's what they used to be called.
Did you make this with AI?
No, I drew it.
Okay. Well...
Orchestrina, doesn't that sound like a drag queen?
Yeah. But what is it?
It's a music box.
Oh, that's cool.
That's the original name for music box.
Oh, that's cute. Okay. Well, Bjork said most of the songs on Vespertine were written before she met Matthew Bonney, so this suggests a song like Pagan Poetry may very well be about someone else.
And the original title was Blueprint. So Blueprint to me is like, this is what I want to build, right? So maybe the song was more like, this is what I want.
Oh.
And then she did never recorded it. And by the time she did, it was like she was with the person who's Blueprint.
Yeah.
And so now it's like,
that's okay, crazy, man.
Anyway. How does it fit within the album's flow?
Well, I feel like it goes to a manic and dark place after the uplifting, gentle undo.
It's classic Bjork.
Yeah, it's classic Bjork through their ups and downs throughout the album.
She's always up and down.
Carl.
I don't know. What do you think about production for this song?
It features a sharp-sounding harp, a music box, an electronic production by Bjork and Marius de Vry.
And she really put a lot of thought into the harp arrangement, explaining, I wanted the harp arrangement to be about the embroidery of love when two people start weaving their core together.
Oof. Girl. Got me hot. Oh. I spent eons on it. It might be my first Sibelius software wet dream.
What's Sibelius software?
It's, I don't know. It's like a software you write music on.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's very composer-friendly.
Huh.
Classical instruments.
And no one was hurt. So Bjork played this.
Let's just start over.
Bjork played the bass line all by herself on this track.
Again. That's a cool moment.
But wait, don't tell me about your bass line.
I make my own bass lines. This is not a lie. Anyway, there's a cool moment where you can hear a Morse code sound, adding a unique texture to the song. You know, can you do Morse code?
No, I never learned.
Damn.
You?
No.
Oh, well, good, because two people need to understand it. I couldn't just Morse code you and you understand it. So either one of us does, or both of us does.
Or both of us don't. You know what I'm saying? All right, well, at another point, the music cuts out entirely, leaving her vocals a cappella. It's such an intimate and vulnerable moment where she's really bearing it all.
Okay.
All right.
I love him, I love him, I love him,
Well,
what's next?
The song meaning. I have to tell you about it.
Okay, what do you think it's about?
I think it's about loving someone so intensely you start to develop doubts and fears surrounding the relationship. Like, you don't want to invest too much because it could scare the other person off or end up being wasted.
We've all been there.
Yeah. But and then I think it's also about putting love between two people in terms of codes and matching and how meeting someone can unlock a certain passion with you within you.
I don't know.
Give me another drink.
As far as lyrics are concerned, there's swirling black lilies totally ripe. What do you think that's about?
It's provocative, and I can never understand why it has to do what it has to do with the song or what it means, but it has nice gothic imagery.
It's like your poetry. What is that? Oh, will you recite some poetry for us?
Okay, here I go. Oh.
Wait, is this your poetry?
Yeah.
You have your poetry printed in a book?
Here we go. Don't make me laugh. I can't do this.
Come on.
So, the heart became transparent. No four-chambered body took on the glassy
Come on.
Whiteness of those underwater medusas known as jellyfish. It slowed down. Its movements became as graceful as of a snowflake drifting down to earth from up high. Every beat of the heart became as distinct a shiny pearl spit from a girl's mouth over the ocean to a boy.
It sounds like you have a gun to your head and somebody's forcing you to say that.
The messages reaching the heart from the girl's mind were about common contemplation, discovery through delaying desire, recovery through relaying response, and pagan metaphors, the plucking of silvery strings, the touch of fingertips on clear glass. Pedaling through the dark currents, I find an accurate copy, a blueprint of the pleasure in me. Swirling black lilies, totally right.
Thank you.
Y'all.
What if I put that in someone's yearbook in high school?
The whole thing?
No.
Can you imagine you just fill up their whole page? They're like, I was just supposed to get a lot of signatures in here.
No, I just mean the swirling black lily is totally right. What? That should be a saying. Like, Riz, no cap, swirling black lily is totally right.
That's, speaking of imagery, tell us about the music video.
That was a lot. Well, the video was directed by Nick Knight, who had previously photographed Bjork for her Homogenic album cover. Mm. Interestingly, this was the first time he directed a music video.
And it was shot in London, in his London studio over a single day in 2001.
You know, I was just thinking, like, she popped a lot of people's cherries on this album, because it's like, she took a lot of risk by just making people that haven't done something before do it.
Would you take up the challenge if she asked you?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Whatever she wanted. If it was to, like, build a house, I'm on it. Well, the concept revolves around a woman preparing for marriage, and it includes some intense visuals like shots of skin being pierced. How do you feel about piercings?
What if she wanted you to be her baby daddy?
Yeah.
Fun fact, the piercing shots weren't actually Bjork. They used a different woman and filmed it with a Sony mini DV camera.
Yeah.
DV, digital video.
And Bjork, the only thing that Bjork did was she pierced her ears for the video. That was her
sacrifice. So those weren't her nipples that were being pierced?
No. It looks just like them?
Well, yeah, it's attached to her face.
What? You know what they look like?
She really originally wanted the video to reflect her love life. So Nike gave her a cameo to make a personal tape.
A camera?
Camera to make a personal tape. Did I tell you that?
Make a sex tape.
Did I tell you that I found my parents' sex tape?
Oh my god. I'm sorry.
Because I wanted to record like some TV show, and I was looking in their closet looking for a VHS that I could record over.
And how did that make you feel?
And I put it in. And I mean, I saw like 3 seconds, but they're burned in my...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. They don't look like that anymore, so...
Okay. Well, they probably have a more updated version.
Don't put that in my head.
The 50th anniversary edition. Well, sex tapes. We all have them. Let's be honest. Alright, and yeah, it was later edited to give it an abstract artsy feel. She's also seen wearing a dress designed by Alexander McQueen, which was later featured in her MoMA retrospective exhibit, and it sold at an auction in 2016 for £7,500. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you believe it?
I think it'd be worth a lot more today.
Yeah. And what is this person wearing it to? I think they're a drag queen.
No, they just... It's just... They have it in their... It's like collecting things.
Whatever.
What do you collect?
Movie tickets. No. Everything. Dust. What do you want?
What's one thing that you collect? If somebody said, oh, Jesse, what do you collect?
CDs, DVDs, magazines. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really collect anything anymore.
That's sad.
Entertainment? I don't know.
You should collect something.
I collect feelings.
Okay. The footage was later edited. Did we say this already?
No.
Tell us about the footage.
Well, it ended up being quite controversial. So much that MTV banned it, and they also created a censored version.
Which is lame.
Yeah, placing black bars over the nude and piercing scenes. Whatever.
Yeah. I feel like the way he did it was like a fuck you to MTV.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, because he could have made it look better. But yeah. Probably didn't on purpose.
What if you saw this on the road? Scary.
I'd stop and ask it for 3 wishes.
Well, what do the critics have to say?
Stereogum said, Vespertine is filled with beautiful buzzing and rippling sounds, but it's pagan poetry that shines the most. The song explores how Bjork can be mysterious and hard to understand. On the surface, simplicity, but the darkest pit in me, and it's pagan poetry.
Yet she reveals raw vulnerability when she stops and chants simply and directly that she loves him. One of the most exposed moments in her career. Back then. We're going to talk later.
What was the latest, like, scandal? You know this.
She was showing a lot of skin at their, people think she got implants.
What?
I don't know.
tell us what BPM said.
BPM said pagan poetry captures Björk's internal battle between sexual desire and emotional needs, highlighting her struggle for self-identity within a committed relationship. This time I'm going to keep him all to myself. Oh, keep me all to myself. She declares as multi-tracked voices swirl around, but he makes me want to hand myself over.
Conundrum.
Yeah. She was seen at a Diddy party. Recently. Or something like that.
During this time?
Yeah. I don't get it. What did Rolling Stone say?
One of the album's most mesmerizing moments is the haunting exchange at the song's end, where Björk's voice intertwines with an overdubbed chorus of herself, hypnotically repeating, I love him, she loves him,
Björk. Hey. Yeah. There's some remixes. Matthew Herbert did remixes of pagan poetry and he called it the handshake mix. Stop!
There's also a J.C. LeMay French trance remix.
That's tight. And Neon Paradise did a version of pagan poetry in the style of Biophilia, and it's good. Props.
And there's been a few covers from bands like
Further Seems Forever.
Do you know who they are?
Nope.
Me either. Let's listen. Nocturnity sounds kind of gothy.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
And then D-Rod Productions.
Hey.
We did it.
We did it.
And they did it. You know, like, I admire people that do covers and remixes. Because it shows that they're just, they love the song so much that they want to, like, pay homage to it.
Yeah. Or they don't love the song that much and they can make it better.
But still need to, like, love it enough to care to make it better.
Yeah, you see it's got potential. Like a puppy with a broken leg, you know?
Yeah. Tell us about performances. And mashups.
She's performed it on almost every tour, okay? And in 2001... She often opened her show with this song, playing it on a music box while sitting on a glass chair. Designed by Matthew Barney, her partner at the time.
On a glass chair?
It was like glass. Plexiglass?
Oh.
I don't know.
Okay.
Rubber? I gotta fact check the exact material.
And what about one of your favorite performances?
One of my favorites was in 2017 at the Opera and Ballet State Theater in Tbilisi. How do you say that?
Tbilisi? Tbilisi?
It's in Georgia, in Greece, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
More recently, in 2021, she performed in Reykjavik with just a harp for her orchestral shows. And I also loved her performance during the Cornucopia shows, which we saw in Milan last year. Oh.
Hi.
And she mixed things up by starting with the outro.
And there's been quite a few mashups of this song, including one by Cisco, the thong song remix, which I really liked.
Yeah. is cool. And then she also has mashups with Ariana Grande, Seven Rings, FKA.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. FKA Twigs, Mary Magdalene, and Brandy and Monica, The Boy Is Mine. Banger. And then TLC, Red Light Special, SZA, Drew Barrymore. She can all the girls.
Tbilisi. Tbilisi.
Tbilisi.
That's how you say it.
Alright.
Tbilisi.
Okay, go to bed, Grandma.
Tbilisi.
No.
Tbilisi. Tbilisi.
Go away. Alright. In 2014, during a Jay-Z concert, he even rapped over a sample of the song as tribute because Bjork was in the audience.
Why is that funny? That's cool.
You don't get it.
No. Can you explain it to me?
It's the end of the episode.
Oh, what? This is so fast. We didn't do cocktails or anything. Oh. Okay, so real talk.
Yeah.
You love Bjork. You love all her albums.
Mm-hmm.
It's an honor to be like doing a podcast about them. We're halfway through this album.
I didn't do it.
What's your state of mind?
Oh,
tell
yeah.
Tell me about the first time you heard this.
We are halfway through the album. The first time I heard this was in like 8th grade. I like it.
Okay.
It's beautiful. I've never really sat down and listened to classical music before. And so I feel like this album has influenced me to do so because it's just felt so refined, mature, and beautiful, and took me to that state of mind, being a child in wonderment while being an adult at the same time.
You know?
Just let it out.
And then, do you remember hearing it for the first time, like as a, you know, like an older young adult who'd been through things and experienced things?
Yeah.
Because in 8th grade, you're like, you know, you haven't really loved and lost. And
I don't know. It's just like you live with the, it's like living with an aunt or a sibling all your life, and she's like always telling you the same shit over and over, and you're just like, yeah, whatever. And then at one point, you're like, oh no, I understood what you're saying this whole time.
And now you're gone.
See, we're not gone. She's just like, okay, thank you. What?
Okay, so that's when you first heard it.
Uh huh.
Where does it fall within, you know, when you think of Bjork as an inspiration to you? And to your music. And to your life.
I think ever since I heard it, and it's just been embedded in my brain, is like in my music and my production. I like the microbeats and the quieted static beats of it all. And I like the cinematic orchestral music. And I just try.
You're brave.
Thank you.
I think we got it.
You got the Barbara Walters moment. Alright.
No, I mean, I think we got the podcast.
Okay. Alright, bye.
Yeah. See you next
Tuesday, bitches.